On Monday, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton delivered an unusually blunt message on Libya to the African Union meeting in Ethiopia. Embattled Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi spent freely in support of many African nations and institutions, including the AU itself. But the Secretary of State declared that leaders are on the wrong side of history if they oppose freedoms and opportunities for their own people.
I urge all African states to call for a genuine ceasefire and to call for Gaddafi to step aside. I also urge you to suspend the operations of Gaddafi's embassies in your countries, to expel pro-Gaddafi diplomats, and to increase contact and support for the Transitional National Council.
The Secretary of State message met a chilly response in Addis Ababa. Then yesterday, South African President Jacob Zuma denounced NATO's campaign in Libya. NPR diplomatic correspondent Michelle Kellerman covered the Secretary's trip and joins us now from her home here in Washington. Nice to have you with us today.
Nice to be here, Neil.
And we also want to welcome NPR West Africa correspondent Ophabia Quist-Arkton, who's on the phone from her base in Dakar in Senegal. Nice to have you back, too.
Greetings.
And Michelle Kellerman, let's start with you. What was it like in the room there in Ethiopia when Hillary Clinton made those remarks?
Well, it got awfully quiet when she started talking about that. The speech overall was pretty well received, especially when she talked about the need for more trade with Africa. She talked about women's rights and said things like, if women in Africa decided to stop work for a week, the economies would collapse. She got lots of applause for that line. She got lots of laughs when the lights went out a couple of times. And she said, you know, in times like this, we got to just plow on. But when she started talking about Libya and gave those tough words, it got awfully silent in the room. And you know, U.S. officials didn't expect to get very welcomed response on that anyway.
Yet it's not usual for a Secretary of State to be quite that blunt.
This is the first time a Secretary of State has gone to the African Union, and this administration has really made a push out of talking about the importance of regional bodies, talking about the importance of regional players like South Africa, for instance. She had her moment and her chance to talk about the need to get African states on the right side of this. The problem is, and she even acknowledged it in the speech, Gaddafi has actually paid for a good part of the African Union's budget. He's helped poorer African states pay for their AU membership and even their United Nations membership dues. So, you know, U.S. officials had the feeling going into this that he's bought off plenty of African leaders, and the only way to shake this up is to speak bluntly about it.
Ophabia Quist-Arkton, what's been the response from where you sit there in Senegal?
Senegal specifically, I have to tell you that Senegal's president, Abdoulaye Wade, has been the first head of state to actually go to Benghazi and to sit and talk there with the rebel leadership. He has also asked them or offered them the opportunity to set up a diplomatic mission here in Dakar. I mean, this is absolutely unheard of. Neighboring Gambia, and yesterday Liberia have also said they have effectively cut diplomatic ties with Muammar Gaddafi in Tripoli. But as Michelle has been saying, most African leaders have had more or less close relations with Gaddafi, even though many accuse him of having supported rebels who have tried to overthrow them over the years. So Africa is divided. You have, on the other hand, the African Union and its main mediator now in this Libyan crisis, South Africa's President Jacob Zuma, who is saying that the U.S., France, Britain, NATO have absolutely overstepped their mandate, that they were meant to protect civilians, but now that they have used this mandate for what they're calling regime change. So you have a very divided Africa about what's going on in Libya. And anecdotally, I've been speaking to many Africans, some who say, you know, look at Tunisia, look at Egypt. It was the people who pushed out those veteran leaders who felt that they felt were corrupt and needed to be driven out. But in Libya, if it's seen to be the West that does it, it won't be seen as a people's revolution, and there may be trouble to come. So that's how Africa is looking at it.
And do they put it in the same context as the intervention by the UN and France in Ivory Coast?
Oh, no, no, no. I think people are talking much, much more about Libya than about Ivory Coast. When Ivory Coast didn't happen, a lot of people said, you know, this is double standards. How come the UN has moved, the Security Council has moved so swiftly in Libya and so slowly when civilians are also dying in Ivory Coast? But the argument on Libya has gone on and on and on. And you can see that ordinary Africans are divided because they feel that the West steps in when its interests are at stake, that Libya is an oil-producing country. Although Ivory Coast produces a little crude oil, Libya is a main oil-producing country for the West, and that this is why the West is pushing Muammar Gaddafi out now, whereas in some other countries, it doesn't seem to be doing anything, or it seems to be doing much less. And they quote, of course, Syria. How come the Syrian leader is allowed to sit in power when he is deemed by his people and many others to be killing Syrians?
And interesting, Michelle Kellerman, that's a question that was put to Secretary Clinton on a African talk show that she appeared on.
And she, you know, she has a hard time answering these questions. I mean, mainly the Obama administration's argument is that the Arab League gave the U.S. the right to go into Libya, that the Arab League was united on that. The Arab League is very divided on Syria. So here you have a situation where the African Union is divided on Libya.
And the response by President Jacob Zuma of South Africa yesterday to the secretary's response speech on Monday, that can only be taken as a direct rebuff.
Yes, and I think it's got to be very disappointing for the administration because, you know, as I said, they've made this a real priority to bring rising powers like South Africa into this idea of supporting human rights around the world, supporting democracy around the world. And when a big country like that clashes with the U.S. over what it means to bring democracy and human rights to countries, then it's a real problem. I mean, this has been a huge priority for this administration, and it's a strong rebuff from Zuma.
And this also comes at a time, the United States and South Africa have been at odds on the best way to approach the situation in Zimbabwe as well. And Robert Mugabe, who's been involved in lots of political repression and one-party rule there as well, South Africa unwilling to be in the forefront of demanding change in Zimbabwe.
And, you know, part of Secretary Clinton's speech...
We'll get to you, Fabia, just a second.
Sorry. Part of Secretary Clinton's speech was really on this broad issue, talking about how leaders, she didn't mention Mugabe by name, but it was clear some of the people that she was talking about, that these people should take a hint from what's going on in the Arab uprisings, that leaders who don't respect human rights, that don't respect democracy, leaders that believe that democracy is one vote, one time, those people will be on the wrong side of history. That was another strong message that she had at the African Union speech this week.
And Fabia Quist-Arkton, interesting that I think just within the last week or so, South Africa and the other SADC countries were very critical of Mr. Mugabe and his failure to call what they call real elections.
You know, they seem to blow hot and cold, the Southern African development community. They almost don't know how to deal with Robert Mugabe because, of course, he's a veteran leader amongst them. And you know there's African respect. You know, he's an old man, 80-something, and they feel that they can't just crack down on them and that they won't be dictated to by the White House, Britain, the former colonial power in Zimbabwe, or anyone else. But you do have African leaders and ordinary Africans crying out double standards, when the White House, the former colonial powers in Africa and others decide that they are going to pick on one leader in particular, and Robert Mugabe is the one that often is quoted, then they go to town. But when other people, for example, Angola's José Eduardo dos Santos. It's true that Angola's civil war is over and not that many people are being killed. But people say, well, they're always talking about the corruption. The West is always accusing African leaders and African nations of corruption and so on. But you have corrupt leaders sitting pretty, Cameroon's leader, they say. How come he has never had a finger pointed at him? Because these are oil-producing countries, and this is because the U.S. and the West needs those leaders as allies. Just take Gabon. the Gabonese leader, Ali Bongo, who is the son of the long-term late president of Gabon, Omar Bongo, was visiting the White House. There was an outcry from many Gabonese saying, yeah, how come President Obama is receiving Ali Bongo? The corruption that was going on during his father's era is worse now. But because Gabon is in June, the rotating president of the UN Security Council, perhaps that's why President Obama has invited him. So lots of people, lots of Africans say, hey, you know, when they want to, the West can be helpful to us. But they operate double standards when it comes to Africa.
NPR's West Africa correspondent, Afabia Quist-Darkton, also with us. NPR diplomatic correspondent, Michelle Kellerman. We're talking about U.S. foreign policy and Africa. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Todd on the line. Todd's calling us from Los Angeles.
Oh, yes, Mr. Conan. My question is, Gaddafi owns actually thousands of hotels in Africa. And he also, every year, he's called the King of Kings, by the way, in Africa. So he owns actually, he gives $1 million and a Gucci bag to every African leader. If he doesn't like them, he gives them $75,000 in a brown bag. But let's remember who Gaddafi is. He's the most ruthless dictator, killed American, killed hundreds of people around the globe, including Europe. But I want to give a lot of credit to Hillary Clinton. She's making a huge difference in the world and the international affairs. She is definitely making a difference.
Afabia Quist-Darkton, Todd, delineates some of what Muammar Gaddafi may have supplied. As you say, there are a lot of people who say he supported rebel movements in their countries and may not feel strongly toward him for that. But there are many other places where, indeed, he has built a lot of infrastructure. He's built a lot of hotels and bridges and ferry boats and that sort of thing.
Oh, indeed. Libya has huge, huge business ventures all over Africa. It's interesting that the callers spoke very specifically. Let me just say, though, that it's not Africans who call Muammar Gaddafi King of Kings. I think he proclaimed himself the King of Kings of Africa, leader of the revolution, brother leader, guide of the revolution. I think it's very much he who gives himself those names rather than Africans. But yes, indeed, Libya has all sorts. It has from gas stations to hotels to luxury resorts to all sorts of operations going on in Africa at the moment, from Rwanda to Ghana to Ethiopia, all over the continent. And it's true that Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's tentacles reach all over Africa. But many Africans are now asking, what, are we going to lose our jobs because this hotel, nobody knows exactly what's happening with the Libyan interests in this hotel where we work? There are lots and lots of question marks as the Libyan crisis continues.
And Michelle Kellerman, the question's not only about consistency of U.S. policy in Africa, there are a lot of questions about consistency of U.S. policy in the Arab Spring. Yes, you're bombing Libya or helping to bomb Libya. In the meantime, not doing anything on Syria, not doing anything in Bahrain, which is the home base of the United States Fifth Fleet.
That's true. I mean, the Obama administration has sort of ramped up the rhetoric slowly but surely, but it hasn't gone to the point, for instance, in saying Assad has lost the legitimacy to lead in Syria or anything close to that in Bahrain.
Maybe one man, one vote in Bahrain would be a good idea. Yeah,
perhaps. They've had diplomats in and out trying to start a political dialogue. They haven't gotten very far. As I said, the Arab League is very divided over what to do about Syria, and the U.S. doesn't have much influence at the moment in Syria at all.
And as we go down the road, as Afabia Quist-Darkton was telling us, people may have forgotten the intervention in Ivory Coast because it was quick and decisive. Things have changed in that country, and we've moved on. Libya drags on and on and on, despite protestations every time NATO has a meeting that things are improving, the pressure is on, that Muammar Gaddafi, it's a question of when and not if he leaves power. The end game is certainly far from clear.
Well, it's interesting because we started this trip before we got to Africa. We were in the United Arab Emirates for a conference on Libya, and it was definitely the mood there. There was definitely a sense that things are moving quickly. You had NATO bombing more heavily. You had the Transitional National Council, this rebel government represented there, trying to get more support from the countries involved. And there was definitely momentum, at least among the diplomats talking. But again, we haven't heard anything since then. And we didn't see much of the response from the secretary's speech at the AU to have more isolation of Gaddafi, which is what the secretary was really hoping for out of that speech.
And in the meantime, she called on African countries to cut their ties to Muammar Gaddafi. The United States has yet to recognize the rebel government in Benghazi.
Well, the difference was on this trip, I'm laughing because they had this very specific language where they said, "We recognize the TNC, the Transitional National Council, as the interlocutor for the Libyan people rather than an interlocutor." That was the slight change that we heard out of that meeting in Abu Dhabi.
That's why it's important to read those communiques very carefully.
Michelle, the people traveling with Secretary Clinton thought that was very important.
Michelle Kellerman, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
NPR diplomatic correspondent Michelle Kellerman and Fabia Quist-Arkton, thank you for your time.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Fabia Quist-Arkton, NPR's West Africa correspondent, joining us from, sorry, she doesn't get to say it. I'll have to say it. Dakar. I don't say it anywhere near as well. Tomorrow, after hackers break into servers at Google, the IMF and the U.S. Senate will look at the future of cyber warfare. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Cunningham in Washington.